Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving with Rusty. Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there. It's Living and Thriving time, and I'm Rusty. I'm so excited. Today is Thursday, and guess what? Thursday is one of my favorite days of the week. Actually, every day that ends in Y is a favorite day of the week, but especially on Thursdays because I get to introduce you to amazing people from all over the world with great skills, inspiration, motivation, and sometimes they have tribulations. I know, I did that purposefully. Did you follow along? Kind of funny. And that's what makes them do what they do. I like to break people apart and look on the inside and see all their gooiness because people are really fascinating and they're amazing and there's so much negativity in the world. Why not find people that aren't negative? And they do wonderful things for other people just by existing. My guest this afternoon is Karen Ford. She is a smart chica about moolah. Yeah, that big stressor, that anxiety, that thing that we all bitch and gripe about, money. Oh my gosh, I can tell you I'm on a journey of rebuilding my personal financial life, and gosh, it's tough, and there's so many different opinions and rules and regulations to buying a house and blah, 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 blah. And I'm hoping Karen can just make it smart, simple, and easy with a little bit of sass because, you know, I like it sassy. Karen, are you out there? I think you are.
I surely am. How are you doing today?
I'm groovy like a Sunday morning. How are you, my friend?
Very well, thank you.
So tell us, who are you?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Tell us who you are, what you do, what inspires you to be you.
Sure. My name's Karen Ford, and I'm a master financial coach, and I'm inspired to help people get out of debt, build wealth, and budget. And I'm a registered nurse, although I haven't practiced as a registered nurse for some time. And I look at it like this. I used to help people get healthy physically, and now I help them get healthy financially. So, and both are important.
Well, and I'll tell you, I host this show twice a day, every Thursday. And strangely enough, the stars aligned. You and I were to connect a few months ago, but you were traveling, so we had to reschedule.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, when we rescheduled, a really well-known hypnotherapist decided to be on my 1 o'clock show talking about anxiety. And I just thought it was a beautiful fit because money always causes people anxiety, doesn't it?
Oh, it surely does. And, you know, that's a sad thing about that is it shouldn't cause anxiety, to be honest with you. That's a huge problem, you know, here in the USA especially, because so many people have gone into debt and they don't know how to manage their money. Therefore, they mismanage their money and they end up underwater, for lack of words. I've coached people with a small debt of $500 all the way up to debts to $800,000. And that was a very interesting challenge, I might say. I also coached a couple that had 86 credit cards. And so many people hear me say that and they're dumbfounded and shocked because they're thinking, why in the world would credit card companies give these people 86 credit cards? To which
exactly
my response
right.
Right, the credit card companies are going to make money. So if they, you know, if they give you the card, they're going to make their money. So it's really unfortunate.
So I actually have been rebuilding my credit. I had a horrible, ugly, messy divorce. He got everything materialistic. I got myself back, my daughter back, my health back, my mental stuff back. So I got the stuff that I needed. He got the physical stuff. We were left with nothing, like literally homeless. And so I've been rebuilding my, and it happens so much in America. It's unbelievable how money is kind of the root of all evil in what we do here. But so I've been rebuilding my credit as best as I can. And I ended up getting one of those prepaid credit cards through a major well-known bank, paid the $80 to just have the credit card, paid the $300, so I had a $300 revolving credit so that I could increase my FICO score. And within 1 month, I missed the payment by 2 days. They closed my account.
Oh, no.
They're horrible. I never read the reviews. It was my fault. I own it. But here we are trying to rebuild our credit so that we can buy a house by Christmas. And these are the things that are confusing out there in the world. And I cannot imagine having one credit card that's real versus 86. Like,
yes.
That's just crazy.
Right.
How do people like me who, you know, we're rebuilding our lives from trauma, it happens. It's very common, unfortunately, rebuild without falling into those little traps like I did? I mean, that screwed my credit.
Yes, it did. Well, one thing, if I can encourage, definitely read the fine print, because so many times people want to rebuild their credit. They seemingly think, okay, this credit card company is going to give me a card, so I'm going to do my due diligence and pay it on time. And certainly, you know, there's got to be some kind of a grace period. That's really unfortunate that after 2 days of being late, you know, that they canceled your card. But definitely reading the fine print and starting out again, trying to rebuild that. That's what happens sometimes with folks, is they're needing to rebuild their credit. And I actually had this conversation with someone yesterday regarding it, because they had to end up having to declare bankruptcy, and same situation as you were in. They declared bankruptcy, and then they needed to try to get some kind of a credit. And to which I said, well, if you're needing to get credit, you've got to pay the card off each and every month, because if you don't pay it off every single month, you're likely to go back down that path again where you're in so much debt and you've got multiple cards, multiple debts. So it's much better to manage just one card at a time rather than starting down that path again. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And I actually have been such a good girl, Miss Karen. From January to this month, I actually raised my credit 37 points. But that's a lot of work. Believe it or not, it's a lot of work, 37 points.
Yes, it is. It takes some time, too. You're talking about time and energy. So time and energy, absolutely.
What are your top 5 recommendations for people like me who are having to rebuild, or even young kids who don't have credit at all and they have to build from the scratch? What kinds of tips and tricks do you offer or recommend that we can start out with, just basically?
Well, what I would have to say with that is, if you have a child or you have children that don't even have a job, then certainly they don't need any credit because they don't have anything to pay for it. And we don't want dear mom and dad to have to bail them out, so to speak. So first and foremost is budgeting, because simply put, a budget is telling your money what you want it to do instead of wondering where it went. So definitely a budget. You can't spend more going out than what you have income coming in. So that's first and foremost. The second thing is if you have debt, then you want to demolish the debt that you have. And how we do that is we make a list of all the debts from smallest to largest. And as soon as the smallest debt is paid off, then whatever that payment was, you want to apply it to the next debt. So let's say, for instance, the smallest debt you have is a credit card. and the monthly payment is $50 a month, and you pay off that card. Well, instead of pocketing that $50 or spending that $50 that you no longer have to make a payment on that card, you apply it along with the minimum payment on the next debt. And that way, that's called a debt snowball. So that way, what you're doing is you're building momentum. The snowball is getting larger as you go down the hill, and debts are getting paid off much more quickly than anticipated. So budgeting is key. Demolishing debt is key. If you don't have any debt and you need to build your credit, then my recommendation would be one credit card as long as you pay off that credit card each and every month. Because I have found that if people don't pay it off every month, before too long, they're going to have a larger balance on that credit card and they're back at square one again. So those are three recommendations. And of course, managing money, the fourth recommendation would be if you have an opportunity to invest in a Roth IRA or a 401k in your workplace, absolutely do that. If your workplace doesn't offer that, then you can go to a business that offers those. There's lots of them out there, Fidelity, Aflac, Edward Jones, there's tons of them out there. And check into opening up an IRA and investing some portion of money each and every month. And the last but not least, find an investment that you enjoy, whether it's real estate or investing in the stock market, something like that.
So how do you invest in real estate or the stock market when you don't have credit?
If you don't have credit, there are ways. Well, first of all, you can buy stocks as an individual by opening up even a small account with, say, TD Ameritrade or something. You don't have to have a lot of money to open up an account like that. Now, when it comes to real estate, I've actually bought properties for as low as $10 before. And I know that shocks people, but there are ways that you can buy properties for $10. And then you can, when you receive the deed, you can sell them. You don't need to necessarily flip them. You can get in the property, you can clean it up a little bit, and then just sell it to where you're going to make some kind of a profit and let somebody else flip it.
Howard,
a lot of times
you're going to have to tell me how to do
ahead.
That because that might save me $150,000 if I can find one for $10. Shoot. Talk to me.
Well, absolutely. The cheapest property I ever bought was for $10. And it was at a state auditor auction. And state auditor auctions acquire properties that people lost because they didn't pay their property taxes on them. So in the state in which I live, every state has a state auditor office. You just merely need to call them and find out how often do you sell the properties that you acquire from people not paying their taxes. And they'll give you a list of the properties. They'll give you the date and the time that they're going to have the auction. And, of course, do your due diligence and check and see where these properties are located. And then you go to the auction and you bid. And that's how you start. Like I said, I know it almost sounds almost unfathomable, but it can be done. Yes.
So I live in the state of Florida, and I believe that the property auctions, and we're going to veer off topic for just a minute, you have to have like $400 or $500 just to even auction. They want you to pay them $400 or $500 even before you can auction. Is that normal? Did you experience that? Or
no. No, in our state, that isn't anything that they require. No. Mm-mm. You don't have to have a minimum amount of money or something like that to do that. No.
Interesting. All right, so back to you, and I would love to pick your brain a little bit later about the whole auction thing because that would help us out a lot.
Absolutely.
Not like not like the credit card that I did wrong. I don't want to make this mistake again, Karen. I don't.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I totally am with you on that. Absolutely.
Oh, Lord, girl, I'm telling you. I'm tired. I work a lot, too. So,
well, the thing of it is you don't want to wear yourself out. You don't want to wear yourself out like a hamster on a wheel, you know, going around and around and around constantly. Right.
That's exactly what that's the place where I'm at now. And it's beautiful. I mean, I'm doing all the right things. I'm 37 points up, but I'm working 70 hours a week. I'm not getting anywhere fast. And not to say that these things happen overnight, which you'll tell us, but what kinds of other things could I be doing that are more productive than wearing myself out? Because I'm getting old, girl.
I hear you. Well, for sure, you know, if you're working that many hours a week, you probably don't have a whole lot of time to do much of anything else. So my recommendation would be to keep doing what you're doing until you can get out of the hole where you are right now. And I know that doesn't sound very promising or hopeful, but, you know, you don't want to be doing this when you're 80. You don't want to be doing this when you're 70. Most people don't want to be doing this when they're 60. So keep doing what you're doing now. And one key thing is you can't borrow your way out of debt. So when I hear people say, well, I think I'm going to go to the bank, get a loan, and pay off of these credit cards, and I just repeat it back, and I say, you're going to go to the bank and borrow money to get out of debt. And then when they hear that, they're like, oh. And then my next statement is, you can't borrow your way out of debt. You just can't do it. So you just start where you are and start hammering each one of those debts one at a time until they're gone. And you start saving. You save a little bit each and every paycheck, even if it's $20, even if it's $50, you know, each time you get paid. You've got to save something each and every payday so that you have a little cushion. You know, you have a little bit of a nest egg there. So if something comes up, and let's say you need to replace two tires. Well, if you don't have the cash to take care of that, then you end up using a credit card to get two new tires. And so what we want to try to do is prevent from going into debt any further. Like I said,
well,
I know that doesn't sound real promising.
But my confusion lies in there are all these programs, and again, rebuilding our lives, and everybody's got an opinion, just like everybody's got a nose and everybody's got a backside. There is a confusion that if you get a loan, you can consolidate all your debt into a smaller payment, and that helps the end game. You're saying that's not a good idea.
No, and I'll tell you why I say it's not a good idea. The reason I say it's not a good idea is because it's not.
I'll tell you why.
Because here's the thing. When we're dealing with money, it's only 20% head knowledge and 80% behavior. So here's what happened to this couple that had 86 credit cards. Five years ago, they were in a pickle with some credit cards and other various loans, and they got a consolidation loan. So they ended up with 86 credit cards again because their behavior didn't change. So a consolidation loan is what I call a consolidation loan. Con. It's a con.
Yeah.
Because they're telling you that it's better that you put all of those debts together in one loan payment because it makes sense. Because they're saying, well, look, your payment each month is going to be less. But when you figure it out and you tally it up, you don't win in the long run. In the long run, you end up paying more money because the interest rate and the amount of time you have to take that consolidation loan out. And here's the other thing. If you don't change your behavior, then you're going to go back down that path again. You'll not only have a consolidation loan, but you'll also end up with more debts. And some people say, well, no, I won't, no, I won't. And they're the very people that it happens to because they didn't change their behavior. Listen, if you hammer each debt one at a time, I can almost guarantee you that's so unpleasant to have to do. You're not going to want to do that again. Whereas if you take a consolidation loan, it seems easy because all your debts are in one payment. And then you probably will go down that path again. I hope that makes sense, what I just said.
It does. But they don't sell it to you that way. They sell it to you, oh, your life's going to be so much easier and da-da-da-da. And, you know, for $19.99, we can make your worldly gig whiz a lot faster. You know, and I think there's not enough financial education out there because
right.
all of us fall for it. I almost fall for it.
Right. That's what happens. That's what people do.
Yep.
Yeah.
So at this point, this is a great segment or a great area for us to stop, breathe, and find out where we can find more information about you, your book. And are you teaching any classes or at any seminars? This is a great place for you to kind of plug yourself.
Sure, absolutely. Be more than happy to. Well, all four of my books are on Amazon.com. One of them is really well known, Money Matters. I also have a book on the topic of real estate investing called You Can Do It. And all four of them are on Amazon, but they can also find me on KarenFord.org.
And are you teaching any classes or anything that is coming up?
Well, I just finished speaking at a seminar in Atlanta, Georgia. I have a financial freedom seminar coming up in September 10th, in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And then I'm always open for speaking engagements and one-on-one coaching.
Yay! All right, so let's move on. Go into this whole really cool aspect of smart money. Money is not smart. Money is the root of all evil in my mind. I think it's how you can be flashy and egocentric and lose absolutely everything, or I don't see any positives around money. What kinds of things can we rewire in our brain about being smart about money?
Educate. Educate, educate, educate. Listen, it's 80% behavior, 20% head knowledge. Don't go to the malls. Don't go to the car lots if you're not in the market to buy a car or if you're not in the market to buy some new clothes or newfangled things. Why? Because if you go to a car lot to just look, that's going to be very tempting for you. If you go to the mall to just look, that's also going to be very tempting. And sometimes people can't overcome that temptation. So if you shouldn't be spending, then don't go to places where you're apt to spend. I learned that years ago. So definitely that. Educate yourself. Be an avid reader. Listen to podcasts. Listen to Rusty. Listen to these things and get it down in you because you're teachable. Absolutely. You've got to educate yourself so that you can be more of a manager of the money that you have, because as we do well with the money that we have, we'll end up getting more.
Savings.
Yeah.
So again, my generation, we're not a generation, you know, I grew up in the 80s, I grew up in Florida, I grew up in the poverty lines, jobs are far and few between, wages are horrible. Boy, it sounds like a scene. And, you know, I'm 43 now, and it's the same. You know, real estate's astronomical, banks are running amok with people's lives, and there's no place to really live anymore. Middle class is kind of vaporizing out. Jobs don't pay you well, or at least they don't pay you for living wages, and we're supposed to have savings. How the heck do we do that?
How do you save? Is that what you're asking me?
How do you save? The average income is, you know, for, say, a single mother, is about $27,000 a year. That's average, realistic, truthful income. Now, how does a mother or a father or a single parent or anyone who's trying to save money, how do they save money when things are just so tight?
There are areas that people can still save money even though it's tight. You'd be surprised how many single moms, and I'm not knocking single moms by any means, but when they go to the grocery store, they're getting all this prepackaged food. They're getting food that all they have to do is pop in the microwave. Listen, any processed food or prepackaged food that's already cooked is extremely expensive, much more expensive than if you get the kind of food that you have to cook. And I know that isn't something that probably a lot of people want to hear, but it certainly is a lot more cost effective. So rather than getting a roasted or rotisserie chicken that's already done on your way home because you're tired at $8, $7, whatever it is, you know, you can get a whole chicken that you can cut up at home and prepare. You know, prepare some meals on a Friday night or a Saturday morning. Take 2 hours, make a big pot of chili, a big vat of spaghetti sauce, a meatloaf that you can put in the freezer. Pre-plan some meals so that all you have to do is when you get home is you heat it up or you pop it in the oven. It'll save you lots and lots of money by pre-planning and preparing those foods rather than getting prepackaged or going through a drive-thru on your way home because you're tired. The other thing is, you know, sometimes people out of convenience, when they go to the grocery store, they get all their toiletries there. However, grocery stores mark those items up tremendously because their primary goal is to sell groceries. So if they're selling soap, toilet paper, paper products, shampoo, that kind of thing, it's going to be marked up. Go to the Dollar General. Go to the Family Dollar. Go to these places that sell those items much less expensive, much less expensive. And if you go to a Dollar General, many times at the bottom of the receipt, there'll be a coupon that says you can save $5 on your next purchase of $25. Well, that's like being handed a $5 bill. So there are ways that you can still cut costs and save. And then whatever you save, you tuck it away.
Well, I'm a single mom, and I can't do a lot of processed food because I have food allergies. So my budget is a little bit more kludgy and wacky because I have to spend more on not junk things, which is not a bad thing. I'm going to live longer. But it's very difficult for parents to save. And I watch people all over the country when we have this discussion. It's such a hot topic because people want the best that they can have. And people want to learn how to save and they want to learn how to squeeze the dollar. But I think sometimes it's just hard, and I think people lose motivation.
Right. And that's where you have to start seeing some things happen in the beginning so that you don't lose motivation. You know, certainly it's hard to do. It's very challenging. However, if you'll start doing it and you start seeing that savings account come up and growing, obviously that's going to build your momentum and motivate you to save even more because you see it's working and it's happening. So even if
right.
it's like $20 a week or whatever, any amount of money that you can save and you can see it growing, that's going to move you. That's going to motivate you to save even more.
I absolutely love the five-gallon water jug that you can get, and you can actually surprisingly find them almost. And a few years ago, I started this really great habit of taking all my change, pennies, quarters, nickels, dimes, stuff that we normally don't use because, quite honestly, most of my bills are automatically withdrawn from my account. So it's very unusual for me to have cash. But when I have change, that's even more unusual. Here I am, 43, and it used to be the most popular thing when I was a kid is that go hunting for change. Now it's like, I don't need it. I'm throwing it in my jug. I actually saved $3,000 in a 5-gallon bucket of just quarters, nickels, and dimes. $3,000.
Right. And you didn't miss it because you just stuck it in that jug. So that's a very good point that you just made, Rusty. Loose change, throw it in a bucket. Throw it in a jar. Put it in something because 9 times out of 10, you're not going to miss it anyway. It's loose change.
Well, and what was fun about that was I was, as a single mom, I was able to pay for a week-long hotel, take my daughter to Disney World, you know, buy her things like, the expensive stuff that normally I wouldn't be able to buy at Disney World, like the sweatshirt and stuff like that. And we were able to splurge for 12 days on my nickels, dimes, and quarters.
That's awesome. You're doing it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yep, you did
it. But then it became a habit. It became a habit. So, you know, we still save our nickels, quarters, and dimes. And I waitress, so I take 10% of my tips and I throw my dollar bills in there. In my little jug, and that's going to be for our house that we're saving up. Our goal is for Christmas. And it feels like nothing now, that action, that that motivation. But it took me a while to get into that habit. What other kinds of habits do you think that we could do to be smart savers or, well, I wouldn't even say smart savers, just unaware. Make it a thing that you just do.
Well, if you have an automatic payment with your paycheck, then I would recommend that you have a portion of that placed in savings account each pay. So absolutely, that is something that can be automatically done. And because you're automatically doing it before you get paid, you're not missing it because sight unseen. It's taken out of your paycheck before you even get paid. So that's one thing. Your idea with the change is another thing. And also do a little reward system. Put a goal up. By such and such a date, my goal is to save this amount of money. Have some kind of a chart, something that you can color in or use a marker or something so that you can see your progress. Because the more that you see that progress, the more you're apt to stick with it.
All right. So we are halfway through the show. Can you believe that? It's crazy.
Wow, that's amazing.
I know. It goes by so fast, doesn't it?
Yes,
what kinds of things would you, what would you like to talk about? What are the key points of what you do, what inspires you to inspire other people to have a financially healthy relationship with money?
What inspires me?
Yes.
I would have to say I hate to see people strapped, stressed, want to provide for their kids, maybe nice little trips, vacations, things like that, and they can't do it. That is what inspires me because it's very difficult. You know what? As a parent, you want to give your kids bells, whistles, the moon, the stars. You want to give them because you love them. And it's challenging when you take your child someplace and they want something and you say, we can't. That's hard. That's hard for a parent to say to their kid, we can't. So not that you want to buy your kid everything, you know, because that's not healthy either. But to come to a place where that's what inspires me is that parents can give to their kids what they're wanting to give them.
I love the fact that people put so much thought into wanting to give their kids stuff. I do believe that there is a disconnect in the way people work with their money. And I believe in the law of attraction. I'm very much into the whole concept of focusing, creating, thinking, being positive, being part of the vibe, that whole thing. Don't misunderstand that. But then I look at parents who get big toys and expensive items when they can barely pay their rent. And that disconnect, I think, causes a lot of confusion, especially with our younger kids when it comes to money awareness. How would you counsel somebody in regards to that? And you know what I'm saying, because you see it everywhere. It's like they can't afford their rent, but they just purchased an iPad. How do you do that?
Yeah, that actually is infuriating to me. But, the thing of it is, you know, you got to take care of you. And ultimately, taking care of you and your family is you got to have a roof over your head. So how do I handle that? I tell them, look, that's great you want to buy your kids things. That's awesome. However, reality is you have to have a place to live. Reality is you have to have food on the table. Reality is you have to have utilities in that home. So, you know, I just kind of place it. I put it on the table right before them, and I say, look, you can't buy an iPad for $500. You can't buy this for them or whatever the item is without taking care of normal things first. I mean, who does that? So I kind of just put it on the table and say, you know, if you want to continue to be able to pay your rent or pay your house payment, you've got to make sure you do this first before you do the play, you know. So that just doesn't work.
Where do you think that kind of disconnect comes from? I mean, it doesn't seem like
I think some of it is an entitlement mentality. I'm owed this. I'm owed this. Sometimes children have that entitlement mentality. Therefore, the parents think, oh, yeah, I want to give little Johnny or Susie these items. And then they cry wolf because they don't have money to pay their rent. And that is horrifically unfortunate. So my response to that is, I think it's an entitlement mentality that people have. And it drops down to their kids, you know. That's why sometimes you have 18-year-olds that, you know, want to sit at home and do whatever it is they're doing, which is not working, and, you know, and have mom and dad pay for everything, which is really unfair.
I think it's really interesting how we've lost a sense of control and a sense of desire to work. You know, when I was growing up, it was always hard work, you get what you want. Like, through hard work, you get what you want. Nowadays, it's, well, we can get credit, we can blow the credit, we can, you know, just kind of willy-nilly through things and not really have any integrity around that. And I think that's very hard to learn or to teach sometimes, financial responsible behavior. What do you see while you're out there teaching and trying to encourage people to be responsible?
Could you ask that one more time?
Well, I'm trying to get to a point where you're discussing what financial responsibility means to you and how you teach it and what kinds of curveballs do you see out there that would be very helpful for listeners like myself who are trying to, you know, get into a better financial health. You're out there and you see a whole bunch of people, whereas we only know our story. So
what I would have to say is a lot of this has to come from the parents, unfortunately. So we have to start with the parents first and do a lot of education. And then when it comes to the kids and they're seemingly adults, 17, 18 years old, or even a little bit older, it's just to sit down with them and say, look,
you know, the government is not responsible for you. and no one else really is responsible for you because you're an adult. And just, you know, education has to happen. Otherwise, this mindset of I'm owed this, or I'm going to go spend money however I want and not, you know, not have to take care of anything else. Absolutely. We have to educate. Otherwise, it's just going to continue.
All right, my friend, we have just a few more minutes, and I want you to be able to tell us where we can find you and how to get a hold of you if we need your counseling.
Absolutely. Well, my website is KarenFord.org, O-R-G, and, of course, my books are all on Amazon.
All right, Karen. Any last things that you want to talk about? Anything that you find that's going to really make today's show pivotal and important and memorable for people so that they can go back and say, hey, I did this, and woo!
I would have to say the number one thing that you can do to take absolute control of your money and your finances is to budget. If you can learn how to budget, that puts you in the driver's seat with your money.
So what kinds of things do you recommend for budgeting? How do we learn how to budget?
Well, definitely my book, Money Matters. But also get yourself some tools. There's tools in that book. Because you can't outspend what your income is. It's just you can't do it. It's not going to work. So you have to learn how to budget. And a budget is not difficult. It only takes 5 to 10 minutes each and every month, but it has to be done every month.
Do you think that a budget is something that can be easily put together, or do you think that people overlook their budget, or can you make it into a habit? Like, is it an everyday thing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. After you do it for 3 months, you're good to go. Honestly, it takes about 3 times of doing a budget, and then you've got it. Yeah.
Do you look for rental, your rent, your car insurance, food, expenditures, things like that?
Oh, absolutely. When you budget, you have to
budget
all. Yeah, a budget, you have to budget all living expenses. What does it cost you each month? From rent to utilities, food, gas in your car, car payment, any bills that you have to budget all of those things. All of your living expenses, whatever it costs you each and every month, that is what you put in your budget. Credit card payments, all of it.
And what about, so here's one thing that I don't think people, and this is something I learned later in life. When I do my budget and I put my credit card payment in there, I actually have an extra line for my credit card interest.
Mm, that's interesting. Mm-hmm.
The only reason why I do that is because I try to hold myself accountable for paying more than I should have. Meaning,
right?
You know, if I know that my TV, which I've never actually purchased, but a TV is say $200, and I put it on my credit card, and I don't pay that $200 off right away, I actually paid over the year like $400 for that TV. That's crazy.
Right.
That's crazy money. That's a big hole in my financial sink that's just dripping down the road, right?
Right. That's exactly right. Yes.
Have you in our last couple of minutes of the show, do you have any other recommendations, suggestions?
If you have debt, do what you need to do, no matter how small the payments are. And get rid of the debt, because debt is a trap. So the sooner that you can free yourself from debt, the better off you'll be.
Yay, I want to get rid of my debt. So bad. I'm so hard. And, you know, I get so proud when I get my little I have alerts on my phone, and this is the way I hold myself accountable. I love holding myself accountable. And so it'll say, you know, ding, 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 this month, look at your credit score, blah, blah, blah. And it actually tells me exactly what's transpired over the last month. You're really good here. Your debt to income ratio is really bad here. My biggest thing is my car payment. I'm always late on my car payment. It just happens to fall at that place in the month where I just, for some reason, for the last 6 months, haven't been able to peg that car payment date. And so I'm working on changing that, but I wasn't aware of it consciously until I got my little dings on my phone.
Right. Right.
So I think that's a great tool for people to use moving forward, is to find something like that that reminds you and kind of pokes you in the side, saying, oh, by the way, car payments due, you know, because we're busy.
Absolutely.
We're busy people. We forget. And financially, sometimes it just doesn't line up. And so you can put more money to the side when you do have the money so that you can catch up and that sort of thing. But I think that's important to put it on your phone.
There you go. There it is. You have it.
All right, Karen. Thank you so much for being on the show. I am so grateful for what you do. You've helped so many people, and I know you're going to help so many more. And keep me posted as to how many more to come up with. And, gosh, 86 credit cards, and you've got them to pay it down. That's awesome. Thank you for being an inspiration and helping us become financially healthier.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty, and we just talked to Karen Forge, the master financial coach, public speaker, entrepreneur, and author, and she has all kinds of tools, tips, and tricks to make your pocket healthier and your stress a little lighter by being aware of your financial needs. Until next time, know that I love you. Know that you're beautiful. Drive 5 miles slower. Hug 5 minutes longer. Sleep in 5 minutes later. And you know what? Hey, go get Karen's book, Money Matters. Until next week.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.